Hello, this is Shale Brenner and Joshua Party interviewing Alexandra Aragon on February 15th at 10:43 a.m. in the Honors Hall Advising Offices. This interview is part of the Barrett Oral History Project. Our goal is to preserve a record of Barrett's history in honor of our 30th anniversary. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and share your experience. All right, so just to kind of kick things off, how about you just say, like, how did you come to Barrett?
Absolutely. I started working here in 2008. I was pretty new to Arizona. I had lived here about a year. And my undergraduate experience was at Fordham University, which is a small liberal arts school. And so I was really drawn to Barrett because I felt like it was mimicking that small private experience in the context of a larger university. And I really wanted to work with students, so I was fortunate to be hired in as an academic advisor for the college.
So you had been in Arizona for about a year. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of research on you. Mm-hmm. So I know this was after. So you did Teach for America for a year out of college, and then this was your first job after that, correct?
Yes. So I was actually a fundraiser for Teach for America. So I wasn't teaching in the core. I was helping them secure funding to support the Phoenix region, and I had just finished a master's degree in counseling and higher education. So I had worked as a graduate student, but this was my second job out of college and, you know, really the start of my career in higher education.
So how would you say that helps you with maybe your advising experience to move up towards being now the head of advising at Barrett?
Yeah, absolutely. I began as a frontline advisor, and we were a much smaller office. We were actually still in the old Barrett complex, so we hadn't even moved to this new facility. And I had a very large caseload of almost 700 students, and then I was part of a period of tremendous growth. So after my first year as a new advisor, I was expected to train and mentor new advisors that came in, so I, you know, really had to think about how I had learned the elements of the job and how I could help others understand our role, and then just how we were going to scale the experience up as we were able to grow. So over the years, I took on a lot of special projects, managing our thesis process, doing things with the website, working with faculty, internships at one point, and I was just really lucky to do a lot of different side projects. So as I progressed in leadership, it's been really important to me that now that I supervise others, I really understand what their job is because I've done it myself, and I still advise students even in this role. So I'm still a part of what I'm supervising, and I love working with students, so that brings me joy to keep doing it. But I think it helps me be a legitimate leader because I am also working alongside my team, and what I ask them to do, I'm expecting myself to do as well.
Awesome. Okay. And then, so you talked a little bit about, like, how you had different projects you were doing. Mm-hmm. Could you maybe talk about any of those or what became of some of them?
Yeah, so one in particular was our thesis workshop. So historically, we had put on workshops just as an additional opportunity for students that they weren't required. So with feedback from our faculty honors advisors, we actually instituted a policy that all students would be required to complete a thesis workshop before they could progress into enrolling in ours. And because we knew we would not necessarily be able to offer enough in-person opportunities to meet that demand, we had to create an online version of that. And so that was a project that I took on. We created a Blackboard course, and I was in charge of making sure we had videos. So just all of the sort of production management that went into that, the scripts, the location, recruiting the individuals, helping with the editing process. And I'm really excited because actually just this past summer, we, with the move over to Canvas, ASU's moving away from Blackboard, we completely redid the whole workshop. So there's new videos, there's new materials. We had feedback from students, so it's just like a little bit more streamlined. But yeah, something that I had been involved with a really long time ago kind of came full circle this past year when we renewed it, so to speak.
Okay, that's really cool. So what are some of the, I know you've been here for like 10 years
mm-hmm.
now.
Yeah.
So maybe what are some of the changes you've seen or even overseen, if you could just talk about any of those?
Definitely. I mean, one kind of significant change is just overall tracking. So when I first arrived, we did not have a DARS report for honors. I think it's easy to take that for granted now that the degree audit system is, you know, available for every major and that's available to honors students. So we were actually tracking honors credits in Excel spreadsheets. So every single student had an Excel spreadsheet that we would manually update, and it obviously didn't speak to a system, so we never knew what students were up to until the end of the semester when we would look at their transcripts and then manually input, and it took all summer just to even update people's credit sheets. So the students really had to rely on the advisors. I mean, obviously some students I think were savvy enough to have their own tracking systems, but there's just a lot of uncertainty about honors credits. And then that meant we weren't doing a great job of reporting or forecasting. So a huge change that's occurred is that we were approved by the university to participate in DARS. We had a DARS encoder dedicated to honors as part of some of her other responsibilities. We have the honors audit. It captures lower and upper division credits. And now we're even at a point where, due to the automation, when people have hit all of their honors milestones, they're automatically processed for graduation. So it's a lot of behind the scenes work, but it's really reduced a ton of manual effort. And considering how large we've grown, I mean, it was just essential that we kind of get with the times and use the technology available.
Okay, yeah, no, I always use the DARS.
Good. I'm glad it's helpful.
And I like that there's the upper division one because I entered an upper division.
Oh, very nice.
So it's really convenient.
Good.
Okay, so you talked a little bit about some of the changes. How would you maybe like to see Verit change further, like in the future, the next 30 years?
Yeah, oh my gosh, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, in terms of advising specifically, we want to keep personalizing the experience as much as possible, you know, really knowing the students, continuing to be creative about ways that we deliver our services. Like right now, we're kind of tied to a pretty traditional model of, you know, an office that functions 8 to 5. But we've started to look at things like group advising for second year students because that's a little bit of a more unique experience. I've actually been running some of those groups as kind of an experiment and they've gone really well. I think that we could do more even with like virtual office hours or just like some participation over technology. I would never want to replace that in-person component, but like just accessibility with quick questions. Right now we have a walk-in model, which we're proud of because we're open all day for people to drop in. But once again, that's just 8 to 5. So I think expanding on that somehow would be interesting. I definitely want to see like continued collaboration with faculty and staff just in general, like, you know, knowledge about what each party is doing. And like, for instance, I think it'd be interesting if a study abroad trip, for instance, had a faculty member and maybe an advisor who helped like chaperone or run trip logistics or even like, you know, did advising abroad with the students. Like that could be just a fun way for people to like take advantage of the resources, but in a different setting. And then I think just always our partnership with the university. You know, we hold a really special place within ASU, and I think it's easy for a university of this size to feel kind of territorial. Everyone's really concerned with their college, with what goes on, and, you know, we're in the unique position that our students are in every college. So I know in my role, I actually feel, like, very personally invested in every college. I want to know how they're doing. I want them to be thriving. And I think that they care about us, but it isn't always that same like level of investment because they're doing their own thing. And I'd really like to see this as more united, like, oh, you know, we want to know how our Verit students are doing in relation to the college. And, you know, we want to be kind of going back and forth a little bit more. So,
yeah, I actually read a short interview you did somewhat recently. And the one thing you talked about was how, like, Verit was an extremely unique sort of honors experience because you could study two totally different fields and you wouldn't be able to do that anywhere else.
Definitely. I mean, I think that can really come out in the thesis in particular. That's another kind of dream of mine, I think, going along with the colleges, is that we would see a lot more pathways to the thesis. We'll never want to lose that ability for students to have a unique experience. Like, this is my idea, very specific project that I've been working on since high school, and, you know, I want to follow that passion. But for a lot of people, a huge stumbling block is that they really don't know what they want to do, or they feel like there's really no process to follow because it's extremely open-ended. And I would just love to see more colleges and faculty say, you know, this is something that we're working on. This is a very specific pathway. You apply to it, you follow these steps, and at the end you have a thesis that you produce, and that it benefits maybe that college. Like it helps them write a grant, or it helps with a center that they have, so that there would be like a mutually beneficial exchange, but that our students would feel like they were following a program. I think that would just make some of them feel more secure and will probably help us see a higher level of completion overall.
You mentioned accessibility, that mm-hmm. the office runs from, like has a set time table.
Yes.
Barrett is unique in that almost all the honor students live on campus, mm-hmm. like right here just outside this building and yeah. across the street in Vista. How do you, as like the director of advising now, see that as a benefit for students when they are pursuing their academic career in Barrett, the Honors College?
Absolutely. I mean, I think just the fact, living on campus in and of itself is hugely beneficial. There's a lot of research that shows that that can just lead to higher success rates. And the fact that we are in a complex, I think, you know, they're able to access advising offices as well as the staff and deans. But just even having that smaller community of, you might not know every person in Barrett, but it's small enough that people look familiar, that it does feel like its own neighborhood. I think when I was in college, the whole university felt that way because it was essentially the size of Barrett. And it was in the middle of the Bronx, and we were in New York City, but we had our own kind of island. And when I left college and actually moved into Manhattan, I was struck with how lonely that was. Like, I hadn't really appreciated that when I was a student and I left my dorm, people were smiling at me, they were waving to me, and obviously, like, in the middle of New York City, that's actually not necessarily, like, common behavior. So I think our students, even if they don't realize, are benefiting just from that social network that occurs here. But then, I know I was talking to a business student recently, like, you can strike up conversations, and because people are from different disciplines, it could also be, like, an academic network or an entrepreneurial network where, you know, these are really bright people, and the idea is that whatever people end up doing or pursuing, they're going to tap into the network that started kind of, like, organically here in Barrett.
Sorry.
No, you go.
For study abroad programs, mm-hmm. how do you think that benefits students? Like, what experiences do students gain from study abroad programs that make Barrett so unique compared to, like, just ASU in general and maybe mm-hmm. other universities that you've experienced?
Absolutely. I mean, I think just to start, any travel is just a really eye-opening opportunity for students. It's just very important to have that perspective shift of seeing a new place and experiencing a new culture. With the honors trips in particular, the diversity of the student body that participates is probably one of the unique elements, that it's not necessarily major specific. And even that the classes are not particularly focused on like a specific discipline, like, oh, these are management courses. They're really rooted in the tradition, the history, the culture of the place. So they're more focused on the destination, if you will. And I think then the whole honors experience in theory is designed to then have you weave that back in. So there would be additional maybe HON courses that you could take. It could influence your thesis directly or indirectly, so that hopefully the requirements of our program, you can actually capitalize on your study abroad to even enrich that further.
So when you're looking at the different honors halls here, in Barrett, mm-hmm. looking at different colleges, for example, the Fulton Schools, they have Tucker House, which is just for engineering
yes.
majors. You mentioned that one of the unique aspects of Barrett is that there's multiple disciplines working together.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any input on how students are arranged in the honors halls? Are they, like, arranged by major? Are they arranged by discipline?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that, like, does that benefit study groups and studying and coming back to advising? How does that work for the benefit of the student at the end of the day?
Yeah, absolutely. So I personally am not necessarily holding any weight in these decisions, but I do know that we have some communities here, so that there is a business community, engineering, and Herberger. But if a particular student that's in that major wishes to be outside of that community, they may. So that's significant to me, where it's like, well, you know, I just want to live in housing, but not necessarily in the business community. I want to just be placed with any student. And then even for those communities, they don't occupy the whole building, so they actually still get to benefit from having a diverse building of others. So I think it's kind of both sides. Like, it is really beneficial when people understand your situation, I think Herberger is a great example of that. It is very stressful for freshmen with the milestones that come up and the demands of the studio. I think it's nice that they have each other, but then I know it's a split floor, so I have another student who's pre-med, and she's on that floor, and she was actually saying it is truly, like, half the floor is Herberger and the other half is CLAS, but they're friends, and they talk, and she's just found it really interesting to be around, like, those artistic people. So, yeah, I've had people with concerns, like, well, I'm missing out, I'm not in Tucker House. It's not that far. You know, I think, if anything, it's good to be stretched. Like, you can still go over there, you can visit, and we want them to visit here, too.
Yeah.
It's a two-way street, but it never hurts to meet others who are different from you, as well as have that comfort of the familiar. So I'm glad that we have kind of, like, a blend, basically, of both.
And going off of that topic, mm-hmm. what do you think about the Vista del Sol Community Center, now that it's a main hub for Barrett students, upper division Barrett students.
Mm-hmm.
How did that occur, and what were the processes behind that, like, once Barrett expanded to, like,
mm-hmm.
start using that facility as upper division honors hub?
Yeah, that's a great question. It was a pretty organic process. So, you know, when we initially came over here, the plan was that all of Barrett living would take place here in the complex. We didn't necessarily know at that time how big we would grow. And Vista was our competition. When students were told, it's a two-year living requirement, so it's time to sign up for sophomore year, they would say, but I want to live in an apartment. I want to have a kitchen. I don't want to have a meal plan. I want, you know, kind of that next step. They wanted to go live in Vista, and we weren't affiliated with them. So it was actually really gratifying the way it worked out to say, well, now you can live there because we have this partnership. So I think it's really important that it is different, that it is that apartment style, because that's a good experience for people to have. I mean, it's nice that they can still stay on this side if they want to. And actually, I definitely have students that live over there that still have a meal plan. So you can still have that, you know, security blanket if you're not planning on cooking. But I think what I would like to see, too, is a little bit more back and forth. Like, the plan is not to have freshmen over there at this time, but we do have human event classes. And I just think it's really important that we keep having the first-year students, like, also engage just to see what it is, but also to have that mentorship. Because the one concern was if we really are separated so much, then first-year students don't get the benefit of, like, their older peers. So we're going to have to just be intentional and make sure that keeps happening so that it isn't, like, totally isolated.
And going back to the time you mentioned that when DARS was introduced to Barrett was
mm-hmm.
super beneficial, I understand that there's a new student services building being built over in the Vista complex.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think that'll have an impact on advising, on honors students in general in the future?
Absolutely. So despite, you know, our smaller size right now, there is still some sectioning off of certain services. So the idea behind a student center is that it really does become this one-stop shop for everything that needs to occur. So you have your advising, but you also want to talk about internships, and then you need some career guidance, and then you're going to take, you know, a professional development leadership course, and then we're going to have you apply for a national scholarship. And maybe you don't do all those things in one day, but you also can hang out because there will be just open space as well. So I look at it almost like an MU. I mean, it is another hub for students, but just that convenience factor. Like, I'm in this study group and we're talking about our thesis, and I, like, we all have a really specific question. Let's just go upstairs and ask advising, and they'll tell us. You know, so just this idea that the convenience factor, and then I think even just for the staff, I mean, it's that much more of a chance to collaborate because people get busy and they try to make meetings, but when you are in the same space, it's more organic that you're having conversations in the hall, you're bumping into each other in and out of work, you're eating lunch together, and, like, those things do benefit the students. Like, when the staff can really work together, that's kind of like when the creative stuff happens that, like, ultimately benefits the students as well.
So, okay, we've talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think one of the really... I still live in Vista as a senior.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's convenient.
Yeah.
I know you're talking about some of the things maybe, like, you're not quite in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what exactly do you oversee maybe more specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. So I oversee academic services. So I directly supervise the Tempe advisors here. So I help hire them, train them. So I'm definitely overseeing more of our logistical processes. So when do we offer mandatory advising? when do we put holds on students? How do we communicate with them? How do we implement systems like DARS, automation? We've had to make decisions about different tools that we've had built for us. We have an online scheduling system. That was something that I helped, you know, research. We looked at different groups. We had meetings. I had to propose it to the deans because it has a cost associated. Then we had to go through a period of testing. We recommended changes to the system. So those are things that I've participated in. I work with the other campuses in kind of an advisory role. So those advisors report to the associate deans, but we've, you know, have a relationship, and actually almost all of them at one point worked at Tempe. So we were even colleagues at a point in time, but just making sure that we're staying consistent. Like, they're allowed to have some deviations. So for instance, West does a little bit more of a group advising model like they have historically, but I want to know that we're all using the same thesis folders, that we're all adhering to the same contract deadlines. And then I just am responsible for pushing out information, you know, since they are separate, just keeping them in the know on, you know, different things. I meet with the dean's office. So for instance, like, we'll talk about course scheduling. So I'm in charge of the new student orientation. So our dates, I deliver a speech, I help manage the logistics. I've been giving feedback most recently on, like, honors sections versus honors contracts, this whole thesis pathway idea, so different areas like that. But I'm directly supervised by the assistant dean of students. So, I mean, really, this is all her area, and I just kind of, you know, support her goals and vision, but handle, like, daily operational kind of things. And then another aspect of my job is our partnership with all the other academic units. So once a month, there's a big meeting on campus for all heads of advising called AAB, Advisor Administrative Board, and we come together, we give updates and reports, but for me, like I was saying earlier, it's also about relationships, like, how's it going, what's new in your, you know, world, because then when we have a student issue, like, I want to know I can pick up the phone and say, like, hey, Casey from CLAS, like, help. We have a shared student. That's definitely something I usually emphasize first. Like, oh, our student who's a bio major. Because it is. But I think people, like, forget right away. So how can we help our student? And that took a while. When I first took the role as manager, I was replacing someone who was very well established and respected. And it took a while for people to get over, like, who are you? You know, and start trusting me and seeing that I was reliable and that I would follow through and that I would support them. I remember really clearly early on, we had a student who was really upset about a decision that was made in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences and wrote something to the effect, like, you know, Barrett will back me up on this. And, you know, I had to come in and say, like, you know, I'm really sorry that this is happening, but actually the decision that was made by CLAS is what we support because that is the appropriate decision. And I know that meant a lot to them because they were like, wow, like, we really didn't think you would do that. And it was like, well, you made a fair call. And I mean, obviously, like, I want what's best for this student. But in this situation, like, we do support that. And so how can we kind of come together? So some of the job is just that kind of thing, like this meetings and, you know, getting out there and stuff like that.
You talked about, like, coordination with the other departments here
mm-hmm.
in Tempe. Could you talk more about the coordination between campuses? Because now there's four campuses that
yeah.
Barrett's part of. And it now has a major influence across the entire, like, Phoenix, Tempe metro area.
Mm-hmm.
So how does Barrett Advising specifically, like, monitor students as they go across campus with the shuttle system, like, make sure that everyone's all working together under one
yes.
towards a same goal?
Yes, great question. So our systems track all students. So when we have reports, for instance, on, you know, the status of our students, like what year they're in, their honors credits, all of them always show all campuses, and then you can filter out if you're looking at your specific campus. And then we have a shared note system. So any notes that I put in about my advising interaction can be seen by advisors at all campuses, which really does occur, I think, between downtown and Tempe the most frequently. Like just yesterday, someone who's a journalism student is a Spanish minor here, and she was like, well, can I just do my mandatory advising here? Yeah, absolutely. But it was helpful to see the notes from her downtown person, you know, just to give context. We hold a weekly advising staff meeting at Tempe, but the other campuses are invited. They're not expected to physically come, but they can call in or Skype in. They do that if we have meeting guests, typically. But if they don't, we just send them the meeting minutes as, like, a best practice. And then once a semester, all campuses come together and we just kind of rotate where we hold this for like a half day all advising meeting where we can just catch up with one another. We might do professional development and then just sort of get on the same page, like, how's it going? Any issues? And then as needed, I will go travel to the other campuses, like maybe once a semester, just to check in. Downtown, for instance, it had a lot of transition. They had a new dean, so I was going there a little bit more frequently. Then there was a period where they were short-staffed, and so we actually had one of our advisors work there half-time, like they did advising here, and then spent 2 days down there, and that was a good example of the partnership. Like, I know they would help us if, you know, necessary. And then it sounds silly, but we use Skype for Business IMing. So, like, throughout the day, we can just IM each other, which is really helpful. Actually, the whole college is on that. So, like, you know, Vista, it's not really, it's going to take me 10 minutes to walk there. So, if I can IM, you know, admissions, I might do that just like with a quick question.
Mm-hmm. And talking more about the unique experiences of Barrett across four different campuses, you mentioned how here at Tempe, the collaborative nature and the small nature of the Honors College campus allows students to interact more frequently with each other.
Mm-hmm.
How does the design of the Barrett complexes on the other three campuses also help with that same feeling of mutual, like, coordination
mm-hmm.
and like mutual coordination
yeah.
between Honors students?
No, absolutely. I mean, obviously they are smaller in scale, but each other location has a specific Barrett hub. So downtown, that's in the university center, so they have a suite in a pretty busy area. So, you know, downtown's a good example. Like, there's not necessarily a lot of university space. Like, real estate is, you know, prime down there. So I think it's great that the students can come in and just even hang out between classes, but the dean is there, the advisors, there's faculty. So that's kind of where they come together. And then West and Poly have beautiful suites where there's, like, place for the students to hang out, you know, the computer lab. I mean, I love West in particular. They have a larger commuting population. They have a kitchen for the students. They have a microwave. They have a refrigerator where someone can put their lunch. Like, just those elements that are important to them. And it's funny because their walk-in model, you know, here at Tempe, we schedule times on people's calendar to have walk-ins. And there, it's like way more organic where they'll just sort of even go to the students. Like, there's a bunch on the couches and they're like, oh, you know, Liz, I have a question. And she'll just sit down with them. So given how small they are, she's able to, which I love. Like, here, that would be a little bit more challenging. But they're able to do that at the smaller places.
And if we go back a bit more to the study abroad programs
mm-hmm.
offered at Barrett, how does that, in addition to, like, benefiting students just by providing cultural experiences and diversity of thought, how does that academically help students, like, with honors credit, honors courses, and
mm-hmm.
how does that, like, translate towards their progress to a degree?
Absolutely. So, I mean, in the longer study abroad experience, you could earn up to 9 honors credits for upper division. So that's, like, a whole semester's worth right there. 3 to 6 credits is fairly common, and they mean at a minimum 1 credit if, let's say, it's like a global intensive experience. So there's always an honors credit outcome, which is helpful. There's a requirement to do upper division outside the major credits, and all of those trips count for that. And then I think kind of like an indirect benefit, though, is just another faculty connection, which is helpful with the thesis. Even if the thesis isn't directly about your study abroad experience, those are pretty diverse experiences, and I think it is common that that professor either will connect you to someone who will be your thesis director, they might be a reader, or they're just going to be a source of support when you're feeling stressed. So I'm always very thesis-driven, and I think that those trips have a direct impact on people having, like, a more positive experience and definitely a stronger network to draw from.
So one of my favorite things about Barrett is that we do offer those, like, HON, like, 394
mm-hmm.
classes. Like, this one I get 1
yeah.
credit for.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I took, like, the design Sun Devil Stadium
yeah,
class
cool.
last year.
Mm-hmm.
Does advising have any, like, impact on those at all, or...?
So the faculty really do get to choose on those. But I mean, indirectly, I know that's something I've been advocating for. Like, I think it's very important that we think about marketing those classes because some of them are a little bit more obscure. And so, you know, unfortunately, it's easy for them to be overlooked. And so we just want to make sure, like, are we putting up the right kind of flyers? Should there be a direct email maybe to certain majors just to get more eyes on the class? There have been occasions where maybe one was really under-enrolled, and so the dean's office asked me, like, can you send this to students, or can you promote it? So we definitely promote them, and then, you know, I've just been a part of conversations about, like, how can we continue to maximize our efforts. The Sun Devil Stadium was a really important example, because that was a collaboration outside of Barrett. It was unique because it was short. I mean, it wasn't the whole semester. It was hands-on. There was a competition. Like, there were just a lot of cool elements. And so, I mean, personally, I would love to see us continue to be creative so that not only do people get honors credit, but they have a very unique experience. Because that's kind of what our whole aim in Barrett is, to just keep making it, like, different.
So what is sort of your maybe vision of making Barrett, like, that optimal place for students? To, like, grow.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think more and more there's so much pressure when you enter college to right away be specialized, to right away be thinking about what's the most lucrative career path, what's guaranteed, times are uncertain, how will you make money? And those things are really important. And we hear this information like, well, you still need soft skills. So, I mean, I just want Barrett to be a place where we provide a solid liberal arts foundation, because there is still a lot of value, especially in terms of those soft skills, to human event, liberal arts, argumentative writing, but that because of the security of the honors framework, knowing, well, I have to meet these requirements, it would allow people to take creative risks. So that, you know, people would feel like, I know I'm going to finish my major. Being in Barrett does not prevent me from doing that, because it's supposed to be supporting your major up. But that we could get to a place where people truly felt, oh, but it's okay for me to, like, try this other thing, or it's okay for my thesis to be something really different, because that doesn't mean I won't get a great job. In fact, it might help someone get a better job or a promotion later. So I'm not sure exactly what that looks like yet, because I know we have a lot of conversations with students about the value of honors, and that's a hard concept. Like, it is more philosophical. It's very personal and individualized to people. What I've found myself saying more and more is, what's your why? What's your reason? What's your motivation? Because it's really different than your friends, and it's really different than mine. So that sort of introspection and letting people know, like, it's okay that your reason's different. So it's, like, I think just a little bit more time for that, but a lot of security where it's, like, let's look at really successful alumni, let's continue to hear their stories so that you also see, oh, it did help them. Because I think that makes people ultimately feel like it's worth it, so that they just continue to see, like, the value of their investment. It's a financial investment, it's an intellectual, it's an emotional investment to do honors. It's hard, it gets stressful. So we want people to feel supported, but also, like, have that reassurance that while, okay, it's, like, not 100% guaranteed, nothing is in life, it is kind of that, like, insurance policy, if you will, towards maybe, you know, more unique experiences in the future.
Could you maybe talk a little more about the importance of, like, that liberal arts foundation? I know mm-hmm. for me as, like, a business student, like, I definitely struggled with that, and my brother does as a finance student.
Of course, absolutely. So, I mean, I think the human event at its core foundation is thinking about building habits of the mind, which really means, like, tackling questions that do not have easy answers, don't have clear outcomes, and are really open to interpretation. And it's funny because I feel like it's business students in particular who really are the ones who are going to tackle that. Like, how is the industry going to change? How will we continue to meet the demands in a global society, in a technology evolving world? There are no answers because these are brand new things. And so even though it can feel like really disconnected, when you read primary texts and you're forced to come up with your own answers, not what someone else said, and it's really dense and difficult and you have to struggle through it, you are sort of building that muscle to deal with those questions that will occur. And being in a situation where you have to speak up and there's people next to you who totally disagree and it's, like, kind of uncomfortable, that's training for when you're going to be confronting that in the workforce or politically or, you know, what have you. So I think we can continue to do a better job of, like, being explicit about those parallels, because right now, you know, I mean, I love the faculty and, you know, they're all academics. It's like, we just love it, like, love of learning. It's like, yes. But it also does connect, I think, to these more practical, like, life skills. And so with the student center, that's actually another outcome, is to start kind of bringing that together by also talking more about, like, leadership development, career building, and how what we've always done in honors the dots are all there, but let's draw a more clear connection so that people feel like it's worth it to go through this experience, because you will come out like that much stronger and diversified.
Barrett, like, at least for me as a freshman, seeing my older sister who's gone through the entire thing and graduated with honors, definitely I can see the worth of Barrett, and it culminates in the honors thesis. So could you explain more about the honors thesis, what exactly it is, how that correlates with your education, and how that relates to your undergraduate degree and your future career plan?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, like we were just saying with the human event and building those skills, that's a pretty controlled environment. The professor plays a huge role in mentoring and sort of training the students. It's a lot of hands-on. So the thesis has a similar outcome, but you're more independent. So the idea is that you've now evolved to the point through your human event or history of ideas, through your contracts, your courses, just life maturity, you've arrived at a place where you can identify an area of interest, and you can essentially convince a professor to collaborate with you. And that in and of itself is a pretty challenging thing to do, to, you know, not only approach a faculty member, have them agree to sponsor you, but then be willing to adapt and shift so that you come up with a shared idea. I think a lot of people have a misperception that you as a student will spend all this time coming up with the perfect idea, and then a professor will just sort of appear and say, like, yes, good job, when really you'll identify areas of interest because that's how you'll know who to speak to. But what really occurs is that you are interested in these things, you find a professor who feels similarly, has a background, and then together you collaboratively come up with an idea, which often means compromise, where it's like you thought it would be one thing, maybe it's another, maybe through the project development a whole new idea emerges that you hadn't even thought about. So it's really more of like that mental training. So when you leave, yes, you have a product and you learn something, but you also learn the skills of persuasion, evolving, compromise, dedication, failure, because there's always moments of failure throughout the process. Hopefully they're small. But disappointment, you know, time management, it's a lot. And so I think that's where we feel like it will, you'll see it play out again in various stages of your life. But we want you to also have that tangible benefit of, like, look at this thing that I did, that I'm proud of, that I have a letter of recommendation from someone that now knows me in a really different way than just being a teacher in a course I took, but was my mentor. So that's kind of what we're hoping you'll get out of it.
And just tying everything together about the accessibility of Barrett, the study abroad programs, the honors thesis, how it all provides a super unique experience for honors students to grow them academically and as a person before they graduate. What do you think about the honors college's terming of being the gold standard now in the United States after only existing for about 30 years? Like, how do you... seeing that it has gained this title, what do you see in the future that overall could improve the entire experience and bring Barrett, make Barrett even more like innovative for the future generation of students?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big title to carry, you know, so it definitely holds responsibility that we need to maintain our standard. So definitely keep that level really high. But being in a place like ASU that's already so innovative, it just means that we also have to be open. Just like we've asked the students to be in human event, how will we answer questions that don't have easy solutions, not get too comfortable with doing things just because that's the way they've always been done? You know, listening to what our students are saying and needing, you know, realizing it's a whole new generation that have new needs and a lot to offer. Where are traditions and things that we hold as core values, but how can those continue to be expressed in creative ways? Because I think you can maintain your sense of identity and tradition, but try new things. And if they fail, own it and move on. And, you know, that will keep us kind of at the top of our game.
All right. I think this was very good.
Thank you.
So, I don't know, any final words of advice or anything?
I mean, I think, you know, I'm in my mid-30s, and so I have a lot of friends who have changed jobs many times, and it's pretty unique to have stayed around a job for so long. I've had different roles, so I've been evolving, but it really is, I mean, Barrett, I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but I do really love it. I love being a part of ASU. I really believe in what we're doing. I think that we will be around in 30 more years. I think that we will continue to move forward. And so it's just really exciting to be a part of all of this and, you know, see what the students are doing. I mean, being an advisor is all about helping shape the future. So knowing that, like, we're putting this out in the world just is a really exciting thing to be a part of.
Okay, awesome. Well,
yeah, there's the final.
Oh.
Yeah, the final statement.
Okay, cool. Thank you for your participation. If you have any more thoughts to share later, please feel free to reach out. And if you have any questions about this interview or the 30th anniversary...
30th anniversary oral history project.
Oral history project, please contact Vice Dean Nicola Foote.
Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Of course.
Yeah.